amigos, eu sou a Gabriela Agostini, apresentadora do Antes Tech do que Nunca, e hoje eu estou aqui no Expo Center Norte em São Paulo, onde está rolando o Universo TOTUS 2023, o maior evento de tecnologia e negócio do Brasil. Para vocês terem ideia, durante esses dois dias são esperadas mais de 10 mil pessoas por aqui. E agora pela manhã rolou uma plenária que estava lotada, foi animadíssima, sobre a magia do cinema, o storytelling, o impacto nos negócios. E eu estou aqui com os participantes que estavam lá, dividindo a experiência deles, para trazer um pouco, um gostinho do que aconteceu ali e vocês já se organizarem para virem para o Universo TOTUS 2024 no ano que vem. Então, sem mais demoras, apresentando aqui os nossos convidados especialíssimos de hoje, eu estou aqui com o Marcelo Forlani, que é um dos criadores do site Omelete e também da Comic Con Experience. Bem-vindo, Marcelo.
Obrigado, Gabi. Legal, né, estar aqui. Vamos tentar falar um pouquinho do que foi lá. Foi muito legal, né? O painel foi divertidíssimo.
Foi demais mesmo. E também aqui com a gente, direto de Londres, o artista brasileiro Eduardo Lima, que na verdade é da Mina Lima. Eu fico toda hora trazendo estúdio, porque é o estúdio. Um dos responsáveis pela criação do universo visual do Harry Potter. Uma honra ter você aqui, Eduardo.
Uma honra eu estar aqui. Muito obrigado por vocês terem me convidado. Foi super bacana. Como o Marcelo falou, o plenário hoje de manhã foi maravilhoso.
E completando aqui essa mesa, a gente recebe com muita honra um convidado internacional, o Pablo Hidalgo, que é nada menos do que o executivo sênior criativo da Lucasfilm, a empresa do George Lucas por trás do Star Wars. O Pablo nasceu no Chile, mas mora nos Estados Unidos há muitos anos, então por isso, excepcionalmente, a gente vai conduzir esse papo em inglês. So welcome, Pablo. It's super nice to have you here.
Obrigado. Thank you for having me. It's a real special to come visit.
So to start just this conversation, when I was listening to the panel, I was thinking like about the how powerful the histories are, just not in the fantasy and the cinema, but also in the business for the brands, as we all said during like the discussion. And I would like to ask to all of you, what do you think are the key factors that make compelling histories that can be used also for brands and for the business? Who wants to start?
Who starts? Pablo starts.
Well, one of the things we were discussing is like, what are some of the secrets that sort of create an experience that people want to keep revisiting over and over again? And I started off the conversation by saying, you know, in the case of Star Wars, it's this combination of heart and mind. You know, it appeals to people in different ways. The heart, the story of the heart is what opens the door. You know, the story of the heart is the emotional core of Star Wars storytelling. It's what interests you in characters, and it's what makes you want to root for them or boo at the villains or whatever. It's something that's powerful and unites a lot of people in that moment. But what keeps us coming back often over and over again, and for people like me for more than 40 years, is that it's got like a design to it. It's got an intellect to it. It stimulates our mind because of how it's constructed. There's a lot of detail to it, and it keeps rewarding every time you visit it. So even by the time you're not necessarily watching for the heart, you're looking at the details, and Star Wars is a perfect example of that, but that's the kind of multi-level of storytelling that you can have that with your brand or whatever that'll keep people more invested than just one or the other. I think we talked about similarities in Harry Potter
yes.
as well.
The same with Harry Potter as well, because I think the thing about Harry Potter is that it's all based in reality, and the way we change. Created that world was a little bit because you're still familiar with the things that we create, and that can be used in any story that you tell. You needed to make sure also that you know your audience, and also apart from the heart and the emotion, is also very important to be honest and authentic all the time with your audience. And I think you can take that to any part of your life, to the business side as well. And yes, Harry Potter and Star Wars, they have a lot of things in common because of that, and because of how the fandom doesn't go anywhere. The fandom just keeps increasing because, again, it's all about emotion, the honesty and authenticity that keeps everyone stuck in that franchise, in that environment, in that world. And we can do that. We can export that to business as well. I have a business as well in London, and I have a shop, and I have a graphic design studio, and I apply those things to the day-to-day business because I need to be honest with my customer. I need to be authentic so they keep coming back. And it's all about emotion as well. You need to make people feel the emotion. It's not emotion to cry or to, but it's the emotion to feel like, oh, I connect with this mm-hmm. message. I connect with this core idea. So yes, so it's interesting.
Well, as a fan of both Star Wars and Harry Potter, for me, it's all about, and because of CCXP as well, we do things at CCXP from fans to fans. So these stories, they, as both of them were saying, are very important to us fans because they speak from here.
Yes.
And the same at Comic-Con, we do things that we believe that everyone there is going to love it, to see, to experience. So it's always, if it comes from your heart, it will bring people together.
Yes. I heard there were lots of crying yesterday with the orchestra playing the Star Wars and the Harry Potter theme. No? So again, so emotion is very important.
Yeah,
definitely. And when we were talking about business, of course, the honesty and authenticity we can understand. But sometimes I think like it's hard for people to understand what are the emotions that can achieve, because it's different when you are in a fantasy or in the cinema. And what you said before and even now, that's like understand about the people and research. You mentioned like today in the morning about research, the importance of that. And maybe, I don't know, is there a way that people inside companies can like conduct a research in a way to understand better the feelings on which feelings they should achieve that is connect to their brand or something on this way? That's a good path or is a good tip to inspiring the people who are listening to us?
Oh, no, definitely. I think, for example, in my case with House of Femina Lima, we wanted to create a shop that, but not really only a shop. We wanted to make people to feel that they are basically inside my mind and Mira's mind, that is my business partner. And also trying to try to bring the things that we create in the film to reality. So when you go inside our shop, we want you to be transported to a different place, that you are there. And that is the emotion that we were hoping people would feel when they are inside our shop, they are transported to a different place. And that can be, again, I think the companies need to know their audience and they will find the emotion that they needed to switch on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Star Wars, it's interesting because it's such a large beast. Like, you know, it's got a lot of moving parts and it's got a lot of parts within parts. For something as big as a major motion picture or a streaming series, that's something where, you know, the studio itself, like Walt Disney, you know, the Walt Disney Company has all sorts of apparatus to figure out what the sentiment and engagement is among audiences. And you know, that's their strength and they'll figure that out. But then like you drill down deeper and deeper and then there's a video games division. There's a group that does publishing. There's a group that does comics. There's a group that produces toys. And each of those individual components have their own communities. Mm-hmm. And each of them know best how to interact with their communities. Some of them are directly online. Others hold, you know, other smaller events in order to gauge interest and have conversations. We at Lucasfilm hold this big Star Wars party every we had to take a pause because of the pandemic, but we try to do it every year or every other year, which is Star Wars Celebration, where we get tens of thousands of Star Wars fans all together. And it's really interesting to see everyone express what it is that they love about it. And one of the things I tried to impress upon people who are just joining into Star Wars is you could find any story, any Star Wars piece, and someone in the community will say that it's their favorite, and someone else will say that it's their least favorite. It's just, and that's the passion that they have. And I think it's actually a strength that you have such a diverse audience because it allows you to try different things. And you recognize the fact that, you know, you could have types of experience or stories that may not go wide, but maybe they were never designed to go wide. They were designed to specifically reach a particular audience. And the idea that Star Wars itself has that kind of variation within its within its shape, I think, is what keeps the job interesting. I got to be honest.
Yeah,
and for those who are watching us and they're thinking, oh, how can I connect with people? You have to look around and you have to see the people that are around you. Like, we didn't have black superheroes till some days ago. And now you can see, like, Miles Morales is a big, huge hit. So people are going, are watching this new Spider-Man, and they are relating to him. Oh, I want to be him. I want to be her. I want to, you know. So all you have to do is walk around, look around.
Yeah, follow the trends of the society itself, isn't it? And see how they are changing.
And I think also playing with nostalgia as well is a good thing, because we are so, I don't know, so excited about technology and AI and all those things that are amazing and should happen. We should not stop that. But at the same time, there is such like a desire to hold a book, to hold those things. Again, you can mix the past with the future and find, again, because I think that is what's happening a lot with, for example, in my case, with the people that we are, our tribe, our audience, that they want the technology, but they also want the nostalgia of having the things. We were talking about that, about the AI, that is amazing what's happening, but at the same time, please just slow down a little bit. We still like to have the books and the LPs. Now the LPs now are
back. Yeah, back. We were saying, everything that we heard was going to be made extinct. We thought vinyl was going to be extinct 25 years ago, but it came back. And so I think we're in this stage right now where there's a lot of exciting new developments and new things coming out. And they'll have their moment, but I think we'll see what the longevity is of it, because I think there'll be an appetite to go back to some of the some of the processes that are just more rewarding, I think.
But what Marcel said is absolutely true as well. You need to know your audience and the emotions and everything that you asked before. It will be very clear in front of you if you know really well your audience and who you're selling or who you're talking to. And they will tell you. It's fantastic, that relationship, that the audience will tell you exactly what they want from you. And you will also find what they want that they don't know yet that they want. Mm-hmm. And that is amazing as well. Mm-hmm. When you are in that sweet spot, that you understand your audience and your audience knows you. And again, it goes back to the honesty and the authenticity and the emotion. So.
And how can then we transform that in products that make that are useful and make sense for the people? It's another like key point. You said about like the design process, and there is also like, how can you transform that and deliver something that connected, you know?
Again, you will know. I think like, for example, again, I keep going back to my case. Sometimes we get so wrong because I'm thinking about something that I want and I forget. Now, okay, Eduard, you have a very particular taste about something, but is that the right thing for your audience? Maybe you should mix what you like with things that people are telling you. And when you find that place as well, that is fantastic. But we have the example of Steve Jobs with Apple. He was amazing because he knew exactly what you want before you even know what you want
exactly.
That. But of course, there were things that didn't go well and he had to tweak, because the conversation started with the customers and the audience. So it's a very interesting process when you are developing that.
It's a work in progress, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, it's always under construction and you always have to test and improve it.
Because it's as myself said, no, the we didn't have any black heroes. Now we have everything, and that is how it should be, and God knows what's going to happen in a couple of months, in a couple of years. And so yes, just keep your eyes open and listen to the people that follows you.
And maybe like taking risk is something.
Absolutely.
Well, and to mention my previous example of having these multiple levels of operation, we're allowed to use areas that are lower risk than a feature film. We could do sort of pilot and test projects in publishing. It's much less expensive to do a Star Wars novel than it is to do a whole Star Wars movie. And under our leadership of Kathleen Kennedy, she said publishing should, among the things that it does, should be an incubator for ideas and concepts. And so a few years back, we did a story called The High Republic, which was a whole new era of Star Wars storytelling. And it went really well. People really responded to it. And that would have been very difficult to launch as a movie, but people like it. And now there is going to be a TV series, there's a couple actually, set in the High Republic era. There's some animation that's already out, and there's a live action version that's coming out. Right. And so we were able to test the waters with what the reception of that would be.
And sometimes takes time, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And especially like when we are inside big companies, we know that taking risk is super hard. People are kind of, you know, afraid of that, because it's kind of, it's different when you are in a more creative side than we are like, for example, in a huge company. So I think like that's maybe it's a key point that this kind of scene can inspire this kind of audience, mm-hmm. isn't it?
But you have to like do the research and see if there is a market for that. And also believe in your guts.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes you know things that you don't know, but you know. And if it's not right, correct it very, very quickly. I know it's easy to say, but you have to see if it's not working, why it's not working. And then try to correct it as fast as you can.
And another thing that appears in the panel that I super like it was about the park. How can you transform like a universe from the cinema in a park, for example, and even in the Comic-Con, there are a lot of like space that were transforming universe that are from the literature or the cinema and films in a space. And we know that, for example, in the retail market, in a lot of like different kinds of market, people are talking a lot about the digital and this connection about the digital and the space and how can you make like experience in a shop, mm-hmm. in a different space, because we need to connect to each other. And how can you like make this dialogue from this two universe? I think all of you has like an amazing experience, and how can connect to that? Which kind of stories and things that you have to share with our audience that are thinking about this?
As I said on early this morning, when we finished Harry Potter back in 2010, we thought that was it. Okay, done. Thank you very much. Everyone did a good job. Bye-bye. A year later, we got a call from Warner Brothers and Universal saying that they were going to create the Wizarding World in Orlando, and we would bring everything to reality. And we were a bit like, oh, that's fantastic. But how are we going to do that? Because it's a world that doesn't exist. It's a magical world with magic everywhere. But if you go there, you are completely transported to the film.
Yes. There's magic everywhere.
There's magic everywhere. Yeah. And be part of that, being part of creating that world for real was even more interesting than to work for the films. Because in the films, lots of things you see in the films are kind of fake. So there's mm-hmm. a wall here, but mm-hmm. there's nothing behind. Yeah. In Orlando, in the theme park, no. You have to go inside the shop. So you have to think about the interiors properly. And also...
You can walk through the wall.
Yeah, you can walk through the... Exactly,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
And now you can get the train as well to go to one part. So this, it's fantastic. But what is fantastic is how the audience, the followers of Harry Potter behave, and how they are so grateful that you made that effort mm-hmm. to create that world for them. And that, again, you can do that in any business that you run. If you know your audience, if you know, I keep going back to that, because if you know your audience, you will know what to do and how to please them and how to keep them interested in your brand or in your business. And that is what we do with Star Wars and Harry Potter, and with the Fantastic Beasts as well. That was, no, the sequel of the prequel.
Yeah, prequel.
Of the franchise. Again, it was an amazing opportunity to introduce new wizarding worlds. So we went to New York, we went to Paris. Unfortunately, we were going to come to Brazil and a third film in Rio, but because of the pandemic, we could not shoot here. So again, that was another way to unite more people, because we were showing how the wizards live in those different countries as well. Again, because the Harry Potter fandom is so immense, it's so enormous, that you needed to keep them all interested and keep the new generation as well interested. The same with Star Wars, I think.
Yeah. The examples I kept citing about the parks was the design work, particularly in Star Wars, the original trilogy, the language that was set by people like set designer, production designer Norman Reynolds and Roger Christian was They had to fabricate everything. It's an entirely different galaxy, so you can't just buy things off the shelf. But at the same time, it was relatively low budget, so they had to buy certain things off the shelf. But what they did is they'd go to junkyards and they would like basically pick apart aircraft wreckage and stuff like that and just stick it to the walls. But they did it in such an artful and creative way that when we watch the movies, we're not really even looking at the detail. We're just absorbing it all. And then it's so compelling that you go back and you freeze frame it. And the fan community has gone through such great efforts to identify every little piece that has gone into those background details. They could tell you the make and model of the original jet engine that was used. Mm-hmm. They love that stuff. Now, fast forward to we're actually making Galaxy's Edge, the Star Wars land at the Disney parks. And all those things that were thrown up against the wall on a tight budget now are being recreated and are being cast and painted and lovingly crafted because it has to stand the test of time.
Yes.
And it's so funny as far as full circle goes. What was once cheap junk is now carefully curated and created experiences because it means something to people and you can't get it wrong, you know.
And as a fan, I go there and I have to build my own lightsaber. I have to get my own wand. So,
yeah,
it's all magic. It's when the magic can I make part of these histories.
Yes,
of these stories.
And I think on Harry Potter, one of the most amazing elements is the letter that Harry gets in the first film. And again, we could have done something completely different, very magical, that opens and explodes, whatever. But we decided to do a letter. Of course, it was written in the book as well, that was a letter. But in the films, we adapt. We have the freedom to make things a little bit different. And we kept as a letter because everyone wants to receive a letter. We don't. No one receives a letter anymore. No, we only receive bills on a poster.
But try to avoid this.
Yeah. But my point is that again, if you connect. If that letter is such an amazing thing that everyone, if you talk to any child, they are still waiting to get their letter to Hogwarts. And adults, I got mine, so.
I just got the bills.
Yes.
And when you are mentioned the letter in the morning, you are also mentioned like the elements that you could bring from Brazil, wasn't it?
Because I was very upset that we could not come to Rio for the Fantastic Beasts. Number 3, but we had the pleasure to introduce our Minister of Magic, that is Maria Fernanda Cândido, gorgeous person, and also I had the opportunity to create the Minister of Magic insignia for Brazil, and that was really fun. And again, it goes back to the research, and I went to Rio and spent 3 weeks there. Research. I lived in Rio for 10 years before I moved to London. I'd never been to loads of places that I was doing the research, and I was fascinated. And so I wanted to, again, be totally honest and authentic to make sure that the audience believes that that insignia that I create is a Brazilian. There's lots of Brazilian elements. And I wanted to make sure that kind of represents a bit of each state as well from Brazil. So there's lots of little information that creates that image. And I wanted to make sure that the Brazilian audience felt proud about it.
Yeah, it's such an inspiration because, like, your own reality, you come from Brazil, so it makes sense for you. And it's not like something that maybe would come from a different person, from a different country. But as it makes sense for you, it was honest and then was there. So yes. Maybe people should look more to their own reference and their identity, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it helps.
Because sometimes we are looking for the answers outside or something that is a trend or everyone's saying. And sometimes it's so external for you and then it's not something in your heart that looks like artificial. So you said like the morning about don't follow the trends. I don't remember exactly the quote, but it was something like try to make your own trends or something like that, wasn't it?
Well, I think people forget, like it's so easy to forget that. Like, nobody knew that they wanted Star Wars before Star Wars came out. Nobody knew that they wanted Harry Potter before Harry Potter came out, right? And then, of course, with both successes, all sorts of imitators tried to live in that space. And some amazing works came out of trying to capture that same magic. But it's not like Star Wars was building on the shoulders of something that came before it. And the same thing with Harry Potter. And again, that all became because, you know, at least in the case of George, he was telling... I know what's telling something that meant something to him. And I think that authenticity breaks through. Whereas if you're following a trend, there's only so deep that that interest can go. That might be fine on the nature of your product. You might your product might may not that, have that depth, but we were there to talk about your product as a narrative, which implies that you're committing a certain amount of depth to what it is you're saying. And so that's just a point to be cautious about.
And if you just follow the trend that the life expenses of this product might be shorter, don't go long tail like Star Wars or Harry Potter, right?
Yeah, because trends change every minute. You know?
Faster now. Yeah. Faster now than ever before.
And do you think that is the problem in the use of, for example, AI and new technology in the creative side that basically like trying to recreate things that we already did instead like building like really new and different ideas?
Right now it feels like it's a solution in search of a need. Like there's no one's really asking for this, but it's an interesting thing. And people are like, okay, well, let's see what it can do. The example we were talking about during lunch was the QR code. Remember when the QR code first came out? Nobody knew, what is this? We don't need this. Nobody asked for this. Then all of a sudden a need arose because of the pandemic. And now it's become an essential tool of all the communication tools that we have, but only because we didn't have the proper context to appreciate it.
Yeah.
So it feels like right now, a lot of these AI scenarios don't feel like they're actually answering a particular need. I think there might be what's going to happen is what's going to stick is something we haven't predicted, because that's the way it tends to go. We're going to be caught by surprise, but nobody wants to be caught too far behind. So everyone feels the need to experiment and try things, but not necessarily have a full map as to where they're going to go.
And I hope AI is used for the good, not for the bad. And that is what everyone should be worried, no? Because there's no proper regulation yet. And if companies are trying to save money using AI and firing people, who is going to buy the products that the AI is going to be producing? Exactly. So we all need to be employed. We all need to be earning money. So I think if people are trying to use AI to save, to make more profit, I think that, again, is the wrong usage of AI as well. I think AI should be there to enhance, to help, to support, but not to remove the humans from the work that they should be doing.
To give us more time to buy more Star Wars and more
and to promote and to promote like a nice dialogue, you know, between the people and the machines. Like maybe we can get there.
No, I'm not against. I think we just needed to make sure there is a good balance that no one's gonna miss out.
And use it as a tool to make more time for you.
But I totally agree. No one is asking for that. And I think that might take a little bit more time to become that thing that is going to be.
And the risk right now is, does it overrun like the channels that we already have with nonsense? Like, I don't know what it's like in Brazil, but in the US, almost no one I know uses their phones as phones anymore because all it is
calls anyone.
Nobody calls anyone. So right now, our whole phone infrastructure are robots calling robots. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I could see a version of an AI future where it's just AI producing things for AI to consume. Yeah. And we just ignore it and we live in our spaces doing what we do. You know?
It's weird, isn't it? And do you have like curious stories about like specifically your work with the Star Wars and your Harry Potter and Comic-Con, other work that you want to address? Curiosities, because everyone, when you are listening that, people are like, oh my God, I want to.
There was a question that Marcel asked me this morning, because we love putting lots of Easter eggs in all the designs we do, especially for Harry Potter. And Marcel asked about Caxambu, is the town that I come from. It's a very small town in Sul de Minas, famosa pelas águas minerais. Visiting, é linda a cidade. Fazendo minha propaganda para Caxambu agora. So I use, because usually when I'm creating like the Daily Prophet, that's the magical newspaper, I'm only given the main headline by the script, and everything else I need to create myself. So I used to, I need a word here, I need a word there. And I said, that fits my name here. So I put Eduardo, written by Eduardo Lima. Oh, no, I was the chief editor of the Daily Prophet. And my mom as well works in the Daily Prophet, my sisters, everyone. And Caxambu became like a quite funny Easter egg thing, because I always mention Caxambu in the Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts, like Grindelwald was hidden in Caschambu for a few months, while everyone was looking across the world, he was hidden in Caschambu. And the production, the directors, even J.K. Rowling, they didn't have a problem with that. They absolutely loved that. They said, "Oh, that's great that you create, you bring a bit of you, and you also help to populate that page with funny facts and stories." So yes, so Caschambu is a famous place in the wizard world, and you should all visit.
I do, I mean, not exactly that, but one of the things I do help out with whenever there's computer screens or data displays or anything tactile or written in the Star Wars universe, I'm often one tasked with putting in that information. And while I don't necessarily pull from my own history, what I will pull is from, like, you know, Star Wars has been around since 77. And my sweet spot for the stuff that I love tends to be from about 77 to about 1990. These were the books and comics that I read and reread the most. They just mean a lot to me. So invariably, if anyone's watching a Star Wars show, a modern Star Wars show, and there's like a planet listed in the background on a screen, and they're like, wait a minute, that comes from an obscure 1978 comic book. Why is that there? It's odds are it's probably me, just because I like to keep those odd things still alive. So things like that I'll often do. The other odd thing I do is I translate most of, but not all of, but most of the Huttees, the Star Wars language that appears when aliens speak. And it started because I had this foundation that Ben Burtt wrote back in the day of when he made Greedo and Jabba the Hutt talk. And that got us a fair amount of information. But then over the years, more and more people have added to Huttees. And so I've been keeping track and I feel like I'm capable of adding more. The strange thing, in the last 5 years, there's been so much singing in Star Wars, more than ever. Before, when we were growing up, there were two songs. There was what the Cantina Band played. I guess two songs there. And then what you hear in Jabba's Palace. And that was it, right? Yeah. Now, through television and animation and in the parks, especially in the parks, there's Star Wars jukeboxes everywhere. There's Star Wars music being played. And our songwriters, they all write out their language, all their words in English. And I'd give it to me, and it's like, can you turn this into Huttese? And the trick is you have to match the syllables, too, because often they'll have the music written. So I'm an uncredited – I can't call myself a songwriter because I didn't write the song. I translated the song into an alien language, and you'll hear it if you go to the parks or if you're watching The Mandalorian or Andor or anything like that.
Amazing. Oh, it's fantastic. Amazing.
I don't have stories like that. All I can say is that everyone thinks that I meet all the talents that come for the CCXP, but it's not true. Sometimes I don't even know if they are here or not because I'm doing something completely different. But it's a very fun part of our year, and we're already working to bring these guys back, and everyone that loves both franchises and everything related to pop culture back in December.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. And how can you end up there? Do you know, how can you transform this passion in your work? How does it happen?
I wish I could tell you, because like that would imply that I had this incredible plan that I'd been working on for years that said someday I'm going to be the guy writing alien songs in a Star Wars show. But it wasn't that at all. It's like... I think the key, and I've actually spoken to kids in school and stuff, and they often ask me the same question because I have the coolest job in the world, and I'm not going to argue that. But and I said none of it was really planned, but what was planned is to have this this basically tool set of skills, enough skills that you could take advantage when a door opens, even though you had no idea that door was going to open. So in my case, it wasn't just that I was a Star Wars fan, and I was. I mean, I still am. I love it. It was also that I was interested in filmmaking, and I was interested in comic art, and I was interested in illustration. So I worked on those skills as well. I was in a visual effects company at the time that a Lucasfilm offer came. I had no idea that it was going to actually fall on my lap, that Lucasfilm had this job posting that eventually became the job that I started off with, but I had all these things that I could bring to the table. It's like, yes, I know Star Wars, but I could also talk the language of filmmakers. And that was of value at that time. If not, that was of equal, if not more valuable than having a deep well of Star Wars knowledge. Because I think they could find someone out there also with Star Wars knowledge, but not necessarily the mix of skills that I happen to bring to the table.
Yeah. the same a bit with me. I moved to London in 2001 and had a contact for my business partner now Mira, and they told me like, oh, she's working in a film about a orphan wizard magic thing, and I didn't know anything about Harry Potter at all. I was absolutely crazy about Star Wars, but not Harry Potter, and I didn't have no clue what Harry Potter was. And I went to the set to visit her to show my work, because before in Brazil I worked in films but in editing, not in graphic design. But I graduated in graphic design, but I didn't know that there was a role for graphic designer in films. And fortunate enough, I met Mira, and she gave me an opportunity to do work experience for a week, 1 week, that becomes two, that becomes three, and I never left. But I remember when I was showing my work, and I met to Stephanie McMillan, that was the set decorator, an amazing woman, so beautiful. And she said to me, oh my God, Eduardo, your work is so, it's lovely, but what is this, is that what I'm more amazed is about how you use the color and how bright the colors are in your work. And he said, yes, I'm from Brazil, Stephanie. I can't do gray and beige, I'm sorry. And she said, no, I think we need a bit of that in Harry Potter. So that I like to think that I brought a little bit of color to the Harry Potter world. And especially on Harry Potter 3, The Prison of Azkaban, I like to say that when the Latinos arrived, Alfonso Cuarón, that was the director, and I started working from the beginning properly. So I said, yeah, that's why it's the best film of the franchise.
what's important here is to absorb everything that you can for the things that you like,
yeah,
and then make something for your own, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the answer, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. but not knowing anything about Harry Potter, I think, gave me a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I was a bit freedom? Different. No, yeah, I was a bit different from it. I think there were other people that wanted that role that I got, graphic design, but maybe they were a little bit more immersed in that, in the books, because I think at the time there was 3 books already out. I never read any of the books. So as soon as I met Mira, I remember, I went straight to a bookshop, bought the 2 books, read really quickly to really, and of course, that word got me, and I became a big fan. And so that becomes even more interesting. In your case, now you were already fan of the comics and stuff, and that gave me the food I needed to keep going.
I think having collaborators that are a balance of both is like super powerful. I mean, we often talk about like The Empire Strikes Back is so many people's favorite Star Wars movie. But it's not as if Irvin Kershner, the director, came to the table as a Star Wars fan. There was only one other movie out, and it's not like it wasn't that deep a well to examine. He came at it from his fresh perspective and his fresh point of view. And with Andor, you know, our showrunner, Tony Gilroy, has made no illusions about his knowledge of Star Wars. I mean, he loves the world that he's building, but it doesn't, you know, he's not coming at it from a lifelong Star Wars fan. But he's got people on his staff and his crew that could offer that expertise and knowledge. And that's part of what I do at Lucasfilm with the group that I work with and that I'm a part of, is like, we often say, we worry about all the Star Wars details so that you can concentrate on the heart of your story. You know, obviously everyone who comes to the table has a passion and an interest in Star Wars, but you don't have to know every little detail because we have people who do that. You know,
I remember on Harry Potter 6, we, up to that moment, was just me and Miriam. We didn't have an assistant. It was just us two doing everything for the graphics. And that film was becoming much busier because we had the diagonal, you have the shop, the twin shop. There was loads of things to be created. But we were clever when we were recruiting and said, let's find the hardcore fan because they will know all the details that we don't gonna have time to remember. And we got this amazing girl, Lauren, that she works with us for 12 years, and she was a really hardcore fan. So we used to ask her, Lauren, what happened with the Godric's Hollow? And she said, oh, blah, blah, blah. And she gave me all the feedback. It was fantastic. So having that balance of the hardcore fans, the people that like, and the people, it's great.
It's about trust, right?
Yeah.
Trust on the guys, on the people who you're working with. Yeah.
Because the thing that as well that happened after all those films, sometimes for me is like a big mess. I can remember which film was. Yeah. It was 3, 4, 5 fantastic bases. So But the fans know. They know every single thing, and they will make sure. No, Edward, you are Harry Potter 3 on that scene behind the thing. They are
and
amazing,
it's about the teamwork, isn't it?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Sometimes people think that to manage something, you need to know everything in every piece, and maybe you just need to know what exactly the parts that you need to have,
yeah.
and hire someone that is a specialist or has this curiosity mm-hmm. to learn about this.
Yeah, have the right people and the ways to get the most out of them. I think.
Yes.
Leave that to the nerds.
And a lot
That's
of things,
us. Yeah.
And a lot of yeah. things that you said brought me the sense about curiosity and also, you know, follow this curiosity, bringing a lot of knowledge, studying, basically. So when you said about the Harry Potter, after you study a lot. So that's something, it's important, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
if you find something, like, kind of... go deep and study on this thing. So I don't know what you think about this.
It's true, but it's also not just study Star Wars, study what inspired Star Wars, mm-hmm. at least in our case, because mm-hmm. it can tell you so much. We looked, you know, George Lucas was so great at documenting his process. So, and we're grateful for it because we can examine it over and over again. And we see the movies that inspired him, like the Kurosawa works, mm-hmm. the Seven Samurai, and we look at Torah, and the Battle of Britain, and all these World War II movies, and you absorb them, you understand what was he looking at, what was he seeing? And I think that's essential to telling Star Wars stories, is rooting it in our cinematic legacy and finding things that interest you in that storytelling and finding a way to put it into the Star Wars world. When we were doing Rogue One, we kicked it off by watching movies like... the Guns of Navarone, and Where Eagles Dare, like all these World War II type heist movies, secret mission stuff. And that, like, you're not copying it. You're just absorbing the DNA and you're understanding what decisions they made and why when you come to the movie that is ahead of you, you know?
And in my case, and I don't remember watching any film about magic. I was watching, my research was more about how was London in the Victorian time, mm-hmm. how typography, how is ink work and all those kind of things, but not magic itself, because the magic, we're going to create a new kind of, I don't know if, yeah, we were trying to establish a new way of magic. So I don't remember watching any film about wizards and things, because I didn't want it to be influenced by those kind of things. But I was crazy about it to find out more about Victorian life in London and the streets and signage and all those things that kind of enrich the world that we were creating.
No? We're really fortunate at Lucasfilm to be with a lot of amazing artists at ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, the visual effects company. And I'm just reminded of this great story where Dennis Muren, who was a longtime visual effects supervisor, talked about in order to, say, create the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, it's like, you don't go watch a bunch of dinosaur movies. Like he went and looked at giraffes, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a matter of going out in the world and looking at stuff. And I've heard other visual effects supervisors talk about this, where young artists were like, they're creating a rusted old battleship. It's like, well, that, something doesn't look right. What are you using as reference? It's like, well, I looked at this movie and this movie.
Yeah.
And so as a result, you're getting like this watered down version. It's like, go to the junkyard.
Yes.
Go look at real rusted out things, because it's going to inform you in a much more, useful way when it comes time for you to create. So just try to chip back as many layers between the artifice and the reality that you're trying to capture, and it'll inspire you in new directions, mm-hmm. I think.
And that's like super important for our audience that, you know, are people from business and technology, because in technology is like, you can, of course, research in something similar, like a product that's made for exactly this audience. But there are so many clever things that come in when people are inspiring in a totally different yeah. kind yes. of community and thing. And then you just mix the idea. So I think like it's about the cinema, but it's also about products and technology. And even like if you have, yeah. I don't know, a small shop for something, I think it's like for everything, isn't it? If you yeah. open your reference, you can have much more clever ideas.
We use at CCXP here. We did go to San Diego Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, London, Paris. But also we did go to Disneyland. We did go to Rock in Rio to see the different kind of experiences and how to take the best of mm-hmm. each experience to build our own experience at Comic-Con CCXP. So yeah, you have to look around. You have to see what people are doing to make like a best way to get through the queue. Because it's a pain in the neck to stay in the queue. So how to make it as pleasurable as possible? Disney knows how to do it.
Exactly.
Their lines are like fun to be in, right? So you have always have to look around.
And the other thing is when you do all those research is to make sure that, yes, you take everything, the good things from all the research, but don't copy. Mm. Go and try to find your own thing, your own way and your own thing. And if you find that, it's brilliant. I think you just need to be careful that you can't, you should not be copying anyone else. Just find your own unique thing. And again, you will succeed.
Yeah, the difference, you know, of copying and being inspired, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. There is something else that I would like to share.
I just would like to thank these guys because we had an amazing panel.
Oh, no. Morning. Yeah. Today has been magical. Thank you very much for having me here. And yes, and meeting you, Pablo, was fantastic.
Yeah,
and
likewise.
We have so many things.
We have so much in common. Yeah. We were just talking over lunch. It's like, oh, you know that person. You know that person. So this community is global and yet small.
Yes.
And I would just want to say that this is my first time in Brazil. And
it won't be your last.
No, it's been wonderful. And it's been very interesting to be at an event like this that is so focused on a particular industry or a particular approach and not like a general just fan convention, because you understand what are the universalities of it. What is it that transcends? I'm able to talk about Star Wars, but there's no one here dressed up, well, that I've seen.
Yes.
dressed up in Star Wars outfits. And so it's like, well, that's interesting, because that means you can have a conversation about this anywhere. It doesn't necessarily have to be rooted in sort of a fan convention, although of course that's all great.
Yes.
And I don't think the same is true. I don't think you could have a conversation about some of the topics here at this show at a fan convention.
As a fan convention,
probably not. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's been interesting.
But I hope now our talk this morning will be inspiring for people, and please go and tell your stories. There's lots of, I'm sure you have amazing, compelling, beautiful stories to tell to your audience, to your customers. So don't be shy.
I could stay here hours and hours, like listen to you guys. I'm learning a lot and I'm a big fan of all of your work. So it's a super, super pleasure. And thank you very much for all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for
obrigado, gente.
Obrigado.
Valeu.
Valeu.
Bom, a gente encerra por aqui esse episódio especial do Antes Tech do que Nunca, aqui na Expo Center Norte, em São Paulo, durante o Universo TOTVS 2023. Você conseguiu ver um pouquinho do que aconteceu, então não perde os próximos episódios e também o Universo TOTVS 2024 no que vem, já se organiza para vir, que é sempre maravilhoso. E você fica aqui, então, com o convite para seguir os próximos episódios, entrar no podcast.totvs.com e ver tudo que a gente já gravou aí ao longo do tempo e seguir as próximas que vêm por aí durante essa nossa edição especial aqui no Expo Center Norte. Até a próxima. Obrigada.